name's Casey Agnew. I'm here today on behalf of Klaus Linder. This is an appeal from Starke County District Court. It is the second time this matter has appeared before you. The initial proceedings were brought before you on a motion to dismiss, which have been sustained by Judge Astera on the basis of statute of limitations. You reversed Judge Sestera's order, returned the matter to the district court without a specific mandate, as I read it. The matter was proceeding toward trial. Motion for summary judgment was lodged. Proceeding for trial and judgment was entered again on the basis of the statute of limitations. I would contend that confess, if that's the proper word, is that if Judge Sestera's view of your prior order is proper, Judge Sestera's order is proper. I don't believe that the order as previously entered stands for the propositions that were taken and relied upon by Judge Sestera in entering his ruling. There are four principal contentions that remain unresolved. The first being, does the statute of limitations apply? That was never determined by this court per se. There is dicta in Judge Castle's decision that makes certain suggestions, but there was no finding. The matter was not presented in such a way that an order competently been entered on that issue.
Counsel, I'm going to walk you back a little bit from the statute of limitations argument and ask, on what grounds does your client claim standing to challenge the constitutionality of the municipal ordinance here?
What's the standing? It's a taxpayer standing case. Taxpayer in the jurisdiction, and the ordinance as applied bears upon his taxation, the amount that he pays for property tax, and standing arises from that status. It is, I think you would call it a facial constitutional challenge. Runs to the substance of the ordinance itself. And we haven't really touched on it before, but the two principal thrusts of the complaint are that the ordinance is passed as a special, violates special privileges in the communities, and that there's this parking lot that was established allegedly for the exclusive use of the Cabela's store. That's a matter of dispute. It's a secondary claim under Article 6, Section 3, I have that backwards, having to do with off-street parking projects. And there is Article 8, Section 6, excuse me. The constitutional provision makes very specific allowance for the construction of a project more or less along the lines of what is being complained of here. But it also specifically sets out the means by which those things can be financed. We know that in this particular instance, the means of finance is not one of the ways of approaching it that is approved or specified by the Constitution. So the real question is, if the Constitution says you either levy a special tax or make a special assessment, you do neither of these, but instead pay with proceeds of sales tax and make provision to that effect within the corner of the actual enactment, is it constitutional? In other words, does the inclusion of specific means of finance exclude all other available means? That's the underlying constitutional theory for the claim of impropriety concerning the actual ordinance.
Thank you.
So to the statute, it seems to me, and research with Mr. Fredrickson and myself have looked at the thing pretty extensively, I believe that the nature of the claim, and I would suggest that you should conclude that the nature of the claim, being one for declaratory relief, actually renders the question of the statute of limitation and accrual a bit specious, because if you read the Boyles versus Hausman case, what I can surmise from that, or what I take from that, is it is not so much whether a right is even in the context of declaratory judgment action. It is not whether a right has been violated that is the measure of the ability to sue. It is the existence of a dispute. It's the disagreement that is extant between the parties that measures the ability to gain jurisdiction of the court.
So in your version of your understanding of declaratory relief is if there's a dispute, regardless of when it commenced, there is no statute of limitations?
In practical
it's
terms,
like
I believe
that. You're proposing just perennial relief.
So long as there's a dispute, yes, ma'am, I believe that's essentially what the rule would be.
And what's your authority for that?
Boyles versus Hausman, cited in the brief. And if you read that in conjunction with Wright versus Pepperell, Wright versus Pepperell recognizes the at least theoretical availability of multiple accruals of the cause of action. You can analyze this thing on an accrual basis or on a dispute basis, however you want to.
Are you saying that once the item has, or the parking lot has been paid for by the special funds, then you would have a time limit in which to bring your action?
No, sir.
You say there's no limit?
It's never.
No limitation.
As long as there's a
action?
Dispute pending concerning the constitutionality of the ordinance, I believe that.
No, but if the ordinance no longer has any impact upon the taxpayer because the amount's been paid, and maybe this is way beyond where we're going, wouldn't there be some limitation on when you could bring the action?
Yes, sir. The bonds are for a period of 20 years.
Okay.
So, practically speaking,
you have a 20-year window.
Yes, sir. You would have to have a case or controversy.
Yeah. Okay.
That's what it really boils down to, is the most basic.
What's your underlying authority for challenging the constitutionality of an ordinance?
It would be the declaratory judgment statute.
So do we have case law that indicates you can or cannot raise constitutional challenges to ordinances?
We have case law that specifically says that declaratory judgment is the proper means by which constitutionality is raised, yes. Cited in brief.
The constitutionality of what?
Of an ordinance. I'd like to preserve the balance of my time for rebuttal if I could.
I have a quick question.
Yes, sir.
I hope it's quick. I'll try. There are multiple ordinances potentially involved, although I think in the first case we only addressed what I'll call the enabling ordinance. The enabling ordinance was founded upon a state statute that permitted it to proceed in that fashion, and the state statute specified what means of financing would be available under that off-street parking statute.
Both the statute and the Constitution. Conjunctively, yes, sir.
And in attacking the ordinance, are you not necessarily attacking the constitutionality of that statute insofar as it would permit the ordinance to do what it's doing?
I don't believe the statute allows the applicability of, or the application of, sales tax revenues to off-street parking projects because of the corresponding restrictions stated in the Constitution. I think you have to read those things together in pair material.
And if one looks at the text of that state statute that I would call the enabling statute,
yes,
does it say that they may use property taxes or sales taxes?
I'm speaking from memory, and I'll buy some time. I don't believe that it does. I think that's an open. I don't believe it does.
Okay, so you're thinking that the ordinance may also be at odds with the statute itself.
It fits within the statute, but it does not conform to the statutory authorization. In other words, they have the ability to act within that the species of parking facilities, but the means by which the debt associated with the construction of those facilities is controlled by the overriding limitations of the Constitution. I hope I've answered your question. My time. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Fredrickson, good morning.
Morning. I'm Jerry Fredrickson. I'm here on behalf of the City of La Vista and its elected officials. Judge Castle, I assume, maybe I shouldn't assume, but I think you're referring to 1933-77, the statute that authorizes the financing mechanism. And this specifically says that they can levy a tax on all taxable property within the city. So, not having thought, taking the direction of thought that you have, whether this involves a challenge to the specific statute based upon the constitutional provision of Mr. Engdahl, one of them that he's relying on, he is challenging, that he has to challenge the constitutionality of this particular statute because that's the basis for the city's decision.
I'm not sure he needs to go that far. If the statute allows the city to collect revenue for particular purposes under this section of the statute, his challenge is that you didn't do it correctly with the ordinance that you passed.
But you're telling us
not what he's alleging.
You're telling us, though, that that statute says that you can use the general revenue.
Yes, it was. You know, I can read it to you, but you already know that. I thought that this court's direction on remand was pretty clear, that focus on constitutional claim is when did it accrue, when does the party have a right to assert a claim. Mr. Lindner had a right to assert a claim. I submit when the City of La Vista enacted Ordinance 979, which created the district and said it was going to use pay for the cost through financing of general obligation bonds.
Or other things, though. It said it could be assessed, it could be...
Broad language. They want to keep their options open.
And if it had been assessed, I think your opponent would concede we wouldn't be here if it had been specially assessed to the property. So it wasn't until somehow there was some implementation of this financing by general revenues.
The implementation was Ordinance 983, which was 2 months later in March of 06.
Now that one was not a subject of our first case.
It wasn't. I didn't go back and review the amended complaint. It likely wasn't. Otherwise, we wouldn't be here the second time. We've caught that.
Well, help me out then. Which ordinances is the challenge addressed?
I'm not sure.
Are we looking at 979, which we discussed earlier in our previous opinion? Yes.
Well,
or 983.
You didn't discuss specifically an ordinance, but you did reference that they created a parking district. And challenge by Mr. Lindner is to the funding mechanism. You couldn't tell from the pleadings when the city acted on or implemented or made the decision on how to pay for the cost of parking district. And that decision was made when the city passed Ordinance 983, which tracks the procedure and is permissible under the Section 1933-17 for bonds to pay for the cost.
And that was the issuance of the bonds?
Correct.
Ordinance.
The bonds were issued, it was in March 26th, maybe, 06 was the ordinance. The bonds were issued on April 15th, 06. Then the city made its first payment of interest in October of 06.
So we've got the ordinance in March of 06. We've got the issuance of the bonds, is that right? April of 06, and then payment October
06. Yes. Yeah.
And those are the dates, in your view, which would, if there be a meritorious challenge, those would be
Mr. Lindner had a claim or a cause of action that he
Right. And just for to close out the circle here, what do you think this applicable number of years is for a statute of limitations?
Four. I mean, with it,
because there's nothing else out there?
There's nothing else out there.
Okay.
And
so that's your view.
And I did not find any authority that says statute of limitations claim against a constitutional claim is unconstitutional, which is essentially what he's suggesting here. A statute of limitations can never run against a constitutional claim. That's, you, in my judgment, settled that as well in the first opinion by citing the North Dakota case by the Supreme Court. That, like any other claim, a constitutional claim can be barred by the statute of limitations. There are statute of limitations.
And the U.S. Supreme Court has said something to that effect.
Yes, they did. Okay. You said something to that effect.
Why isn't each installment payable under the bonds challengeable individually?
Well, I think
there would be payments within the 4 years from when this action was commenced.
I think all of this stems from, originates out of, and is a consequence of the decisions that the city made in January, March, April, and October of 06. What happens after that? The city was obligated when it through this financing scheme, through its bonds, to make payment on the bonds. And that's their decision. That's what led, that's the approval of the cause of action. I don't think that the taxes, well, first, they don't make it a separate decision. Are we going to this year assess a tax so we can have cover some of the bonds? Either we will or we won't. That's, they're, I mean, it's part of the pot in their expenses, no question. But their decision was implemented and became effective in March of 06, October at the latest when they made their first payment.
So this, in your view, this isn't a rolling statute or perennial statute of limitations to out to 20 years?
No, it's not. It's not. It can't be. One of the purposes of statute of limitations is at some point it's settled.
The bond issuance ordinance permitted the bond to pledge general revenues, and the bonds themselves did indeed pledge general revenues.
Yes.
Okay, that's, and you're arguing at least at that point the statute began.
And that's when, that's the rule of the basic language that you cited in your earlier first opinion about when a cause of action accrues, that's when you look, when that's when the statute of limitations runs, and I think Judge Zastera connected the dots that you gave him in the first opinion and rightly concluded that claims barred by the statute of limitations.
Isn't the flip side, though, that an unconstitutional act is void ab initio?
Well, no, that's not the flip side, because we're talking about accrual of a claim for, based upon an unconstitutional provision. Until it's enforced, it's there and it's unconstitutional. And if it's not enforced until later, then it's still there. I mean, it still operates. So the question is, and I assume you're referring to the Jackson case, which I've read numerous times and I confess I don't understand it, all of the ramifications and permutations of that case. But as the first part of it says, well, they enacted the statute, it was good for a year, then they amended the Constitution to try to validate the statute that was not any good under the former statute and tried to bootstrap themselves into a good statute and tried to avoid, I guess.
And generates a new day one, arguably.
Yeah, so, I mean, that was not a cause of action when to assert a claim. Those things were not issues. It was a means of whether this subsequent amendment to the state constitution had any effect on invalidating what was the old constitutional provision invalid. I have nothing further.
Thank you very much. Do we have any time for rebuttal? There is no time for rebuttal, so we will go on to the next case of the day, which is Maestrich versus Maestrich.